Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Welcome to the show. Today is November 9th, 2016. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 18,589, the NASDAQ at 5251, the S&P closed at 2163. We are live. Tonight, we are discussing what to know about divorce before it happens with attorney Constance Nelson and attorney Alan Tuller of Gross McGinley. Lori is in the studio with us tonight. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while we typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. The number to call in is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So let's get started. Our topic again is what to know about divorce before it happens. I want to welcome each of my guests, attorneys Alan Tuller and Connie Nelson of Gross McGinley. With 33 attorneys, Gross McGinley offers a powerhouse of legal experience to individuals and businesses in the greater Lehigh Valley region and beyond. Legal services include, but are not limited to, banking, business, employment, internet, real estate law, wills, trusts and estates, as well as matrimonial and family law. Alan serves as chair of Gross McGinley's Matrimonial and Family Law Group. In addition, he serves as a mediator, helping families face difficult circumstances while easing the burden of legal expenditures and added duress. His experience representing Lehigh Valley families in the family court system allows Alan to help clients navigate through stressful proceedings. Connie provides counsel to Lehigh Valley families in all areas of family law. Her extensive experience representing individuals and businesses in litigation, as well as her former work as an educator, provide valuable insight into the dissecting of complex issues with the ability to explain them. She handles sensitive issues delicately and professionally. Connie and Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
There's so much to say about you guys. I had to like put it in a nutshell, and it still came out with all of that. So welcome and thank you for being here. Alan, I like people, our listeners, to kind of get familiar with our guest and what their passion is, what drives them. So could you tell us a little bit about, you know, the question would be, you know, what do you love about this area? Maybe you don't love it, but what drove you to it and gives you the passion to go into work every day?
Is an interesting word to use when talking about family law. I was a drug and alcohol counselor before I went to law school, and I found once I became a lawyer and had my first family law case as a young associate doing soup to nuts general practice law, that a lot of the same issues that I was confronted with and had to deal with when I was a counselor were present here in a legal form. And here I am now, a trained attorney, and I have clients who are going through possibly one of the most stressful things that anyone can go through. Their family is falling apart. If there are children involved, they feel that they are at risk of losing their children. Everything that they thought that they had saved for, the life that they thought they were going to have, feels like it's disappearing before their eyes. And while I try very hard to keep my lawyer hat on and leave my therapist hat back in the closet where it belongs, some of those old skills come into play. And I think that's how I ended up sort of slowly becoming a specialist in the area of family law to the point where I do it virtually exclusively now.
Well, it certainly gives you empathy to the situation, and there's a lot of transferable issues I could see in that realm. So that's great insight. I appreciate you sharing that. Connie, you were a former prosecutor. How do those skills help you in your family law endeavors?
That's correct. I was a former prosecutor in Northampton County of about 13 years there. And you know, the one thing that I can honestly say when I was a DA was my goal was never to seek convictions. My goal was to seek justice in any situation. So to translate that to what I do currently, when someone comes in to see me with regard to a divorce proceeding or a support proceeding, and I hear, you know, the lofty goals, for lack of a better phrase, that they seek, you know, I want it all. I listen to the situation and try to determine what is fair in this situation. Unless the other side, unless there are allegations of abuse or something of that nature, but at the end of the day, I'm seeking justice, if you will, for that client in determining what is the best case scenario here, because my goal is always to make sure that the client understands that in their mind, they believe that they should have it all. However, when they go into a court of law, the court of law is going to be weighing certain factors as well. And so therefore, I just try to manage their expectations. And in the back of my mind, I keep the fact that we are seeking justice for all concerned in this situation.
That's great. And I would assume that that helps resolve the issue sometimes a little bit faster, because that should be the goal for both sides. You know, if both parties are working toward doing something for justice, you know, fair,
yes,
then we would hope that that would help it resolve itself a little bit sooner, maybe. Not always, I'm sure.
Not always, but as long as you have parties who are keeping certain goals in mind, for instance, Alan spoke about the children and things of this nature. So as long as they are maintaining what is important in the situation, which is having some semblance of being able to communicate with each other for the purpose of raising their children, which are the subject of the family, hopefully, yes, with keeping that in mind, we would be able to resolve it sooner than later and more amicably, as opposed to having to go in and fight and bang heads together in order to get a resolution.
That sounds great. Great experience from both of you. So tonight, I thought what we could do is talk about what to know about divorce before it happens. And that sounds a little funny and odd, but sometimes we never know when these things are going to come up and bite us. So to be a little bit informed and just informed in general about our own financial situation gives you a leg up if you're ever faced with, could be divorce, it could be the loss of a spouse in some other way. So tonight, in talking about knowing about divorce, what to know about divorce before it happens, I thought that we might want to talk about what happens to understand what you need to know. So, Connie, what are some of the high-level considerations that need to be reviewed prior to divorce, such as, is this the only option, and is that part of your responsibility to ask that question?
I don't know how high-level the considerations are when you say high-level, but
I guess I was kind of getting at, when someone comes in and they think they're going to enter into a divorce proceeding, do we need to first look at high level, does this make sense? Is there any responsibility on the attorney's part to see if there's a possible reconciliation or resolution to what we think might be a divorce? And back to Alan's point about being a counselor, maybe not your job. So I just kind of wondered, is there any responsibility of the attorneys in that?
I think that's a great question. I believe that by the time someone comes in, let me start from the beginning. By the time someone picks up the phone and calls one of us and says, I wish to come in to have a consultation, I would like to believe that that person has already gone through the different scenarios in their head. I could stay if this changes, and then they stay and it doesn't change. you know, different scenarios that they go through, and then they get to the point of where they say, all right, things are not changing, and for the good of myself and for the good of my children, if there are children involved, this is what I need to do at this point in time, and then they contact us. So generally, when they come in, it is not, I don't know if Alan does, but I don't say to the individual, have you thought about going to marital counseling or something of this nature? Unless I hear some type of inkling that there is hope to save that marriage, then it might be something that I broach with them, but otherwise.
So I think that's a great point. And for anyone who's listening who may be thinking about separation or divorce, try to work through any of those issues ahead of time before you take that step of going to an attorney, because maybe you need to do some reconciliation, communication, talking, a little homework for yourself before you take that next step. So that's a good piece of advice. We're taking our first break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with the attorneys Connie Nelson and Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Connie Nelson and Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. We are talking about what to know about divorce before it happens. Different items come up. We're going to talk about what to expect, what to anticipate, but some good advice already in that you want to make sure that before you go talk to an attorney, sometimes it's a good idea to try to, seek resolution or counseling, or have you tried ABC first? But I'm sure Connie would mention, though, if there is other things that could harm someone, they definitely need to go get help right away.
And that's exactly right. And I was going to mention that absent abuse of yourself or your minor children or adult children, whoever the case may be, absent some form of abuse, if you've taken other avenues, I assume that when you come in to see us that you are at the brink of where you have made a thoughtful decision that this is the course that you wish to take to end your marriage at this point in time.
Okay. So assuming divorce is imminent, what would be some of the considerations to be reviewed? If you want to take that, Alan?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see that initial consult as the opportunity to provide that prospective client with information so that he or she can make an informed decision about whether or not they want to proceed with a divorce. I never see it as my job to say to someone, have you thought about trying to go to marriage counseling? Have you tried to work through your issues? I'm a family law attorney. People come to see me to ask me about divorce in Pennsylvania and more particularly in the counties where I practice. What can I expect? What are my rights? What can happen to me? Mm-hmm. In the course of providing them with that information, they may realize that it does or does not make sense for them to pursue a divorce at that point in time. Sometimes simple economics dictate that it might not be worth pursuing a divorce for a whole host of reasons. On the other hand, economics may really dictate that you should have started 2 weeks before yesterday. So, depending on the facts, there are, in my way of explaining it, up to three different trains leaving three different stations on three different tracks. The tracks run parallel. The trains leave the station at different times. They run at different speeds, and they go different places. Custody, support, and the divorce itself, which consists of the act of severing the bonds of matrimony through a final decree in divorce, and what we lawyers call equitable distribution, the identification and division of the marital assets and liabilities. So if you have children, then you've got the custody component, you have likely a child support component, and if you have marital assets and liabilities, you have that equitable distribution component. And it's my job to explain to the client how those different processes work, how the different aspects of the court system handle them. There are different offices, there are different individuals, different court officers who address those problems. And with that information, they can then begin to understand what they need to gather in the way of information, especially on the support end of things. Here's how a domestic relations section calculates support. Here are the factors that are going to go into that calculation. Here's the information that you need to have. And here's the likely range of outcomes.
I think that's a great overview. I want to go back to something you said. So first of all, I love the analogy of the three train tracks. I can visualize that. And one's for custody, one's support, and one's the ultimate divorce itself. That's good to visualize that way. You did mention something, though, about counties in which you practice. So someone's coming to you for a divorce, and you help people in Pennsylvania and the counties in which you practice. So the importance of an attorney, finding the right attorney for your divorce, could go down to what county you reside in and what county that attorney can practice in. Some people might not realize the importance of that as well.
Absolutely. I think you expect value when you're parting with your hard-earned dollars, and you expect value when you're hiring a lawyer. And it seems to me that value consists of two things. One, knowledge and expertise in a particular area of law. Don't go to a foot doctor if you've got kidney problems. You don't go to a patent lawyer if you've got a family law issue. Someone comes to me with a patent law problem, way above my pay grade, I'm referring you out. So the other thing I think that you pay a lawyer for is their understanding of how things work in a particular forum. Different counties operate ostensibly under the same set of rules of civil procedure and the same statute, but every county is a little bit different. The flavor is a little bit different. How they do things is a little bit different. The hearing officers and the conference officers that conduct custody and support conferences all bring different emphasis to the aspects of the case that they deem more important. And a lawyer who's practiced in Lehigh County for 20 years, Northampton County for 20 years, Monroe County, Carbon County, that lawyer gets to know the players. You go to Philadelphia County for the very first time, you're at a disadvantage, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you're paying me to drive to Philadelphia, mm-hmm. which is foolish, mm-hmm. I think, again. Mm-hmm. So I try and explain to prospective clients when they come in that, you know, if you have a divorce, if you have custody, if you have child support, and we're in Lehigh County or we're in Northampton County, here are the procedures in that county, because counties have different procedures. The way custody actions work their way through the courts is different from county to county, and it can often be very, very different. And a client wants to understand from point A to the end of that train line, what's the process look like? Mm-hmm. If I've never been in that county before, I can't explain it to them.
Right. That's a great point. I think it's an important one that people might not realize. Can we talk a little bit in more detail? We've talked about support and equitable distribution, and those are monetary calculations, I suppose, that you go through with your client. Can we talk about support first? And support could be spousal support or child support. And we have about a minute before our next break. So if you could just maybe give a high level, talk about the support, and then maybe we mm-hmm. could get into a little bit more detail about if there's important things that our listeners would have to be aware of if they see this on the horizon at some point.
Well, the first thing to understand is that Pennsylvania is what we call a guideline state when it comes to the calculation of support obligations. There's a preset formula, and in its most basic terms, it's a numbers in, numbers out determination. So if you have two parents who are both W-2 wage earners, that's the easiest calculation to perform. The domestic relations section will take basically the Medicare wage line, and they will plug that number in, and they will subtract from it federal, state, local payroll taxes. If there are mandatory deductions, union dues, mandatory retirement in the case of certain state employees, they will deduct those. The process is intended to get to what is called net income. Net income is what is used to determine your financial obligation to a child or children or to a dependent spouse. Those W-2 incomes are put into the formula. That formula kicks out a net income, and the formula then tells the conference officer and ultimately you how much money you are going to pay or get for the number of children involved, and if spousal support or what we call alimony pendente lite is warranted. And the process is not about what's fair or unfair. The process is not about whether or not that support obligation leaves you with enough money to pay your rent or gives you enough money to pay your rent. It is what the formula says it is, and that's really the end of the discussion.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about what to know before divorce happens. I have with me in the studio attorneys Connie Nelson and Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I'm talking with attorneys Connie Nelson and Alan Tuller from Gross McGinley Law Firm right here in the Lehigh Valley with lots and lots of areas of law. So even in divorce, sometimes we have to tap into other areas, and it's nice to have a cadre of other professionals that we can tap into. If you have questions this evening, we can take your questions live on air, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, we can read your question. You just call in 610-758-8810. Give your question to Lori. She can bring it into the studio. Her name's Lori, too. Bring the question to the studio, and we'll take a stab at answering it. So again, 610-758-8810. Before we went to our last break, we were talking about how important it is when you're working with an attorney to pay attention to where that attorney practices. If in your jurisdiction they're familiar with the county court system, whether it's Northampton or Lehigh, that could help with the process, make it maybe go a little bit smoother, have some ins that way and in the how the procedures go. So that's important to pay attention to. That's something to know, folks. And we were also talking about how they calculate support, and support in Pennsylvania being a guideline state and using a preset formula. And that could be for spousal support, dependent spousal support, or for child support. There also comes into this deliberations, I would say, something called equitable distribution. So there's one thing about the money that's coming in. It could also be some shenanigans around the assets when we talk about equitable distribution. Connie, can you talk a little bit about what that might look like, or what we would want our listeners to pay attention to if they, again, think something might be on the horizon, or maybe they have kids who might be going through this, that they could share some little tips of what to pay attention to?
Certainly. So when we talk about When we talk about the equitable distribution, what we're speaking of there is the dividing of assets and debts, frankly. And so it's important to note what are the separate assets. So assets that the parties acquired prior to the marriage. Then we take a look at what the marital assets are, mm-hmm. what the marital debts are, and then property that is acquired by either party post-separation. Mm-hmm. So we look at these several categories, if you will, and then with respect to the marital assets and debts, that's where we, number one, determine what those assets and debts are, and then we determine what the valuation or the value of those debts and assets are, and then there's some type of determination as to how are we going to split these things up. Best case scenario is if the parties are able to say, you know, that was your couch, you know, that was my pinball machine, whatever the case may be. If the parties are able to actually sit down and amicably split up their debts and their assets, and then Alan and I would merely need to form what is known as a marital agreement and have the parties sign off on that marital agreement, agreeing to take their things as they may.
Connie, can mm-hmm. I ask a question about that? Mm-hmm. So if the parties come to you and it seems equitable, I mean, they have worked things out. They've come to you, they say, you know, we want to do this nicely. We have kids. We're trying to take right. care of them, pay attention to them. We've come up with what we think might be a fair split. They're going to ask you to look at that, mm-hmm. and then you could draw up a marital agreement. And that doesn't mean then that they're actually having to go into court. Some people think you're going into court for divorce. It doesn't necessarily mean that.
Right. So we would draft that agreement, and basically we would go into court to then have a judge sign off on the agreement or the stipulation as it is.
So, mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's important then for folks to be aware of the assets that they're possibly bringing into a marriage that they acquire during the marriage mm-hmm. and how they title things, because you said, is it marital property or not?
Right.
And so we might want to talk as we go through the show in a little bit about maybe some things to pay attention to there. Jeff, have a caller on line one? I'm not sure this is a question that our attorneys can answer, but we will certainly try to see. We have Anthony from Phillipsburg on line one. Anthony, can you hear us?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay, so your question is?
All right. I know this has nothing to do with family court and lawyers and stuff, but 2 weeks ago, I was at work, and I was scrolling through my Facebook on my lunch break, and I came across a picture on a popular bodybuilder, weightlifter kind of guy's page.
Uh-huh.
And on the picture, it was me and five of my teammates when we won the state championship game back in 2008. And on the other side, it was a split picture. Mm-hmm. There was a picture of a woman who was, she looked like she was about to cry, kind of depressed. And the title of this article read, five students have orgy with...
Oh, no, yeah. Okay, well, I'm not sure that that's a question that the attorneys can answer as their family law, but I would certainly think that you probably could contact an attorney that could help you with that, Anthony. Sorry, I think we had to cut that question, but would you agree he should just contact an attorney if he has
Absolutely.
An issue with what that picture looks like?
Yes.
There may be, and underscore may be, sort of misappropriation type claims that can be raised with respect to the unauthorized use of your likeness in promotional purposes for some third-party product without your express permission. It depends on where the picture was taken, how it was taken, how it's being used. If you're not happy, consult with an attorney who specializes in that area of media law.
Or there may even be a claim of libel or slander implied in this picture. So
okay. So, Anthony, contact an attorney and see how they might be able to help you. Okay? So that was fine. So thank you for calling in. So in speaking about support, we've talked about spousal support and child support, and we've talked a bit about equitable distribution. And as we go through this, I want to talk about some of the misconceptions that people may have about how that income gets calculated, and possibly the equitable distribution too, if we can give some highlights on some misconceptions. Can't cover everything tonight. This is kind of an overview to help folks who may have an impending divorce, be thinking about divorce, or have family members that may be. And these are some tips to pay attention to. We're taking our break. We're halfway through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions 52 degrees under overcast skies. Tonight, clearing, lows around 34. Thursday, sunny skies, highs around 55. Friday, Veterans Day, mostly sunny with highs around 56 degrees. Saturday and Sunday, sunny skies expected with highs each day in the 50s. The time now is 6:31. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back. Folks, I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Alan Tuller and Connie Nelson from Gross McGinley. We are talking about what happens when you think divorce might be down the line. What can you do ahead of time? And we talked about child support and equitable distribution, child support and spousal dependent spousal support being some pre-formulated kind of guideline from the state, and equitable distribution looking at what kind of property we have prior to the marriage, what is marital property, and even property that may be acquired post-separation. So these are all little facets that the attorneys, when you are working with them, will dig into those details. We're kind of trying to give some high-level areas of things to pay attention to. One thing I want to kind of follow up with is some misconceptions around the calculations of maybe support and equitable distribution, but that because some of these calculations are done on that predetermined formula for the support, would you say that emphasis should also be placed on discovery? And I suppose discovery is also very important in equitable distribution as well. So if you guys could talk about maybe some misconceptions about the income, what we should pay attention to, just a couple of alerts for us. Again, can't cover everything, but some items that will steer our listeners in the right direction if needed on whether we have misconceptions about income or discovery or equitable distribution.
There are lots of misconceptions in support and divorce generally. As far as support goes, if you're a W-2 earner, the calculation is probably as easy as it's going to get. In other words, the domestic relations section is going to want to look at your most recent earnings statement. They're going to want to determine your year-to-date income as close to the date of the conference as possible. And they're going to utilize that income, by and large, to determine what your support obligation ought to be. There are sometimes misconceptions that come into play with respect to additional household income. He, she remarried, has a boyfriend, lives with their parents. Doesn't their income come into play? And again, by and large, the general rule is no, it does not. The only income that the domestic relations section is going to consider is the income of the parent, a spouse, a paramour, a housemate, a family member living under the same roof. Their income is not going to be considered, even though it may seem that that leads to very unfair outcomes. The bottom line is the law basically says that only the parent has that financial obligation to support a child. Some third party's income is not going to be considered. There are a lot of misconceptions about what is net income and what's a legitimate expense when you're talking about self-employed individuals people who generate business income. So once you get away from that standard W-2 employee and you have someone who generates their income from a business, things that the IRS says you're allowed to deduct for purposes of arriving at adjusted gross income for purposes of taxation are not necessarily the things that the domestic relations section says you can deduct for purposes of arriving at net income. Depreciation is a classic example. Auto and truck expenses are another. The domestic relations section will bore down and they'll want to know just how much of that car use was personal versus business. And they're going to expect them to go through your expenses. Some domestic relations section, Northampton County has staff accountants who will review your tax returns, and they will provide advice and information to the conference officer or the court as to what they think is allowable versus not allowable.
The reason I love this show is because you learn so much. So here's a huge alert, because I could see where someone might, and I'm a CPA, so I could see where someone could think they're going to be really clever, yes, and they're going to go buy that $10,000 computer or that $30,000 truck thinking they're going to run their net income down, and then boy, oh boy, won't she or he get anything. And that's not the case. They're going to factor in, I'm sure there's probably some regular business expenses.
Absolutely. They're going to look at how the business has been run. Retained earnings is a classic example. It's not necessarily the case that retained earnings are automatically going to be added to your income for purposes of support. The question of control is paramount. Are you a minority owner, or do you have control? Do you have decision-making power over how those retained earnings are going to be used? And I would argue almost as importantly, if not more importantly, historically, how has the business handled retained earnings? Are there specific foreseeable business events that would require that you retain earnings this year if historically you haven't done so? Those are the kinds of questions that you can be expected to answer if you are trying to get creative with your accounting and and reduce your income for purposes of support obligations.
Right, so be careful before you get too creative to make sure it's going to make a difference or not. And what about equitable distribution, Connie? Do you see where there could be some misconceptions about equitable distribution?
Well, I think along the lines of what Alan was just talking about, where the parties have to be careful about their creativity. And, you know, and one of the things that I think about often, and it goes in line with what Alan was just talking about, are self-employed individuals who attempt to hide assets or income and things of this nature. So that's one of the concerns that I always have whenever someone comes to me and says that their spouse that they are attempting to leave is a sole proprietor in a business and things of this nature. I'm always thinking that what they're showing us isn't necessarily what the truth is with regard to their income status.
Okay, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live on air or off air. I did have a question come in from Lydia in Easton. And it's as much maybe a comment as a question. I'm not sure when. And she says, when I was divorcing and not in the marital home, I had to file federal income taxes as my husband did. He got a hefty refund and I paid approximately $5,000 in taxes. So I could see where a question would come out of this is that, how do the lawyers get involved with the filing of the income tax return to know what is fair or is not fair?
We absolutely get involved in that. It is a question that typically comes up in a domestic relations section. If you're there, the conference officer will always want to know whether or not you're filing a married joint return or not, because it affects how they calculate your net income. In other words, as you know, tax rate for married filing separate versus married joint will be different sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if a spouse has taken away the choice to file a married joint tax return, and as a consequence of that unilateral decision, the other spouse incurs tax liability because he or she has had to file married separate, that's certainly a claim that you can preserve and raise in the equitable distribution portion of your case. In other words, when you get to the master and divorce, you can make the case that that the other spouse put you in a position where you incurred a post-separation liability really through no fault of your own, especially if there was no legitimate reason to file the marriage separate. People do things out of spite. It's divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is often the case that filing a marriage joint tax return benefits both parties, and yet you will see people who just insist on filing marriage separate and incurring tax liabilities along the way. The court has the ability to reconcile those inequities as part and parcel of the final resolution.
So you want to make sure you're raising something if you think it wasn't fair. If there's
Absolutely.
A flag there, you want to raise it with your attorney rather than just accept things. We had another question offline. Jeffrey from Allentown. I'm going through divorce. My wife has a PFA against me and is holding my things hostage. If I pay for a constable to get in the house we both own and she doesn't show up at the agreed time, will I lose the money I paid for a constable? Do you know the answer to that question?
The answer to that question is very simple. That kind of arrangement should be confirmed in writing between counsel, if not the result of a court order. If you show up at the house at a designated date and agreed upon time with an agreed upon constable and the other party is not there or does not cooperate, you have the right to go back to court, get a court order, ask for sanctions, and yes, I think you have the right to ask the court to require that the other party compensate you for the constable fees that you paid with no result. Courts, in my experience, take a dim view of those kinds of games. So if there's an agreement or a court order that says that spouse A is going to be able to retrieve his winter clothing and maybe a passport and some personal effects, and the agreement is that he shows up with a constable at his expense at 10 a.m. on Saturday morning and wife isn't there, if I'm representing husband, I'm going to be in court the following week on a petition, and I'm going to get counsel fees.
Great. Thank you for answering that question. I do want to mention, if you don't mind, that Gross McGinley, for professionals who may be listening to the show, because I am told that there are a number of professionals in our community who listen to the show, that you have seminars. And I imagine you have seminars on more than just these topics, but this is how I was introduced to you, by attending one of these seminars, and it was called Accounting for Divorce. Mm-hmm. So there are ways for professionals to attend some of these sessions you may have from time to time, not always just in your area, I assume.
No, absolutely. I mean, we're a large general practice law firm, and most, if not all, of the practice area groups within our law firm will put on seminars, educational programs, and
so if a professional is interested in getting on your list for those, do they just go to your website?
That's a great place to start.
And what's your website? I want to make sure I get that out there. Just
the name of our law firm, GrossMcGinley.com.
GrossMcGinley.com, and that's McGinley.
Correct.
Nick
and
Gimley.
You can reach any of our lawyers via email. First initial, full last name at GrossMcGinley.com is our email address.
Okay, great. We had another question come in off air. Peter from Whitehall, he asked, and let me see if I can phrase this. Mm-hmm. Pre-marriage, he had stocks and investments in an account in his name alone. Then he got married. After 2 years, he put her name on the account. The value of the account the day it became joint and the value at separation was the same. Is it divided as marital or only his? It's a great question, Peter.
It's marital. He placed her name on the account, and any value that those accounts have generated during that marriage will be split. As per the equitable distribution as marital asset.
Now, if he had not made it joint, he had just had it in his name, so it was a pre-marital asset, mm-hmm. married for 2 years, and then they decide to separate, he had kept it in his name alone, because we're talking about equitable distribution. What would be included if well, and it might be a rule of thumb, I don't know, but what would we expect might have been the outcome in that situation?
Well, that's not a rule of thumb. That's covered by the statute, and that is...
Well, I'm not an attorney, so
the increase in value from date of marriage to date of separation on a premarital asset is marital property, if there is any. And in the case of multiple premarital assets, losses must be taken into consideration and offset against gains on other premarital assets. It's called equitable distribution for a reason, and the court has a fair amount of discretion in deciding how to handle things like that. That particular factual scenario where a premarital asset is placed into joint names just before separation in a brief marriage might be treated very differently by a court than a situation where a premarital house is placed in joint names and the parties then divorce 15 years later.
They're
apples and oranges.
Okay, thanks. Folks, if you have questions, we still have time. There's 15 minutes. We're taking our last break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
Financial advisors offering a broad spectrum of financial services. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices with your host, Lori Siebert, and I have in the studio with me this evening attorneys Alan Tuller and Connie Nelson from Gross McGinley, and we are talking about what to know about divorce before it happens. Some of you are probably wishing you had listened to a show like this before you got divorced, kind of giving you some little heads up items to pay attention to. We just had a great question from Peter, which talked about equitable distribution. Connie, can you talk to equitable distribution as far as inheritances go? Because sometimes I have suspected that people hang on to the marriage waiting for mother-in-law or father-in-law to kick the bucket because they know that their spouse is going to really inherit a lot of money. So do we have any cautions about inherited property in a marriage that might be, on the brink of something?
Well, generally, inheritance is not a part of the equitable distribution in general.
Mm-hmm. So. In general. Mm-hmm. So if they keep it separate, mm-hmm. it wouldn't be included.
Right.
But if they made it joint, I would imagine they just made it marital property, maybe.
And the reason why I said in general, it's not part of the equitable distribution, is because as long as they don't use marital property to somehow improve that inheritance, it can be separate and distinct. However, let's say that they inherit a property or something of that nature from a parent who has passed on, and the property needs some rehab. If they take money from the marital assets in order to rehab that property, and then they sell it or whatever the case may be, the asset, the improvement in that asset, if you will be part of the equitable distribution.
Okay. So it leads to the comment that this is so complicated and can be so complicated and why it's so important to have an attorney involved. Now, I had a question come in from a listener via the website, and I was going to ask you anyway about how sometimes we get to a divorce because maybe one spouse can't take the other spouse's spending. And sometimes there's a lot of financial issues that come up in a marriage that cause problems. So one of the questions that came up, this person asked, Can I say, I enjoy your show and would like to speak with someone about financial consolidation of credit card debt due to divorce. And do you have suggestions of a time or agencies that can help a six-figure earner with this issue? So it sounds like credit card debt due to divorce and any help that's out there for someone in the issue, if we can take a stab at that.
Absolutely. I mean, credit card debt is a common problem in divorces, and it can sometimes be a difficult problem if there are not sufficient funds available elsewhere in the marital estate to pay off that credit card debt at the time of the divorce decree. And by that I mean, if the credit card debt is joint, all the divorce court can do is allocate responsibility between husband and wife as to responsibility for that debt. And Chase or Discover doesn't care. Mm-hmm. If that debt's not paid in a timely fashion, they're coming after anyone whose name is on the account, regardless of what the divorce decree or property settlement agreement says. So, you know, what we, again, we're lawyers, not financial planners. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that you have to be careful of when you're resolving a divorce is trying to anticipate future hiccups and problems. And, you know, leaving credit card debt out there with simply an order that says, well, husband's going to pay 60% of it and wife's going to pay 40% of it and divide those monthly payments along those percentages going forward is, in my opinion, a recipe for something going very wrong very soon. So consolidating debt, if it's possible, is something that you can do. There are reputable agencies out there. There are attorneys who specialize in handling those kinds of debt management problems, and you should speak with someone and be very, very careful that you do your research beforehand and that you're not parting with more of your hard-earned money for someone who's making promises they can't keep.
Very good. Thank you, Alan. And to credit card debt, there might be other kinds of debt, liabilities, mortgages. Any alerts we have there that is similarly split in equitable distribution? What do we need to know about liabilities that the parties might have? What if I have a car loan and we're joint on the house and I'm trying to think what other kind of debt someone might have?
Well, first of all, make sure that you know what's out there.
Oh, she's saying to Mike.
Okay.
First of all, make sure that you know what's out there.
Okay, so that's part of discovery.
Mm-hmm. Part of discovery. Do a credit report check. You're entitled to one free one from the three reporting agencies every year. They don't like to advertise that fact, but you're entitled to it. Go do it. Because discovery is a wonderful thing, but discovery is simply me, a lawyer, sending your spouse a set of questions and written requests, asking them to give me certain answers and provide me with certain documents. It is not always the case that I can tell whether or not they are telling me the truth. And so if you don't know about a particular credit card debt and she or he doesn't tell me about a particular credit card debt and you get divorced and your property settlement agreement assumes that all of your debts have been addressed and resolved, you've got a problem. Now, fine, it's a problem that you may be able to bring back to court, but that's not really what you want to do. You want to be done at that point. Do your credit report check. Make sure you know what's out there so that you can make decisions about whether or not credit card consolidation is something you need to do. Bankruptcy might be something that you need to consider. All liabilities should be resolved satisfactorily as part and parcel of divorce. It may not be possible to pay them all off at that moment, but they should all be addressed and resolved so that you have closure.
That's a great takeaway. And that getting that credit report, TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax are the three institutions. And also, the caution is making sure that you're going on the proper website for those as well. So it's all about awareness and making sure you're as aware as you are when you're going into these deliberations or whatever you guys call them when you're talking about them.
And if I may just add something to that, what I need people to take away from everything that we're discussing today is there is a responsibility that the parties hold when it comes to divorce. And I understand that the thought process is, this isn't fair. I can't believe this is happening to me, but it is happening. So you have to deal with what is happening. And what Alan said is completely correct. You have a responsibility and a duty to yourself to go and make sure that everything is being addressed the way that it should be addressed. Make sure that you have informed us, quite frankly, of all of your liabilities and things of this nature so that we can make them as part and parcel of the equitable distribution. If you don't tell us, we don't know. We're not living in your home. It is your responsibility to find those things out so that we can help you in the situation.
And I think you mentioned that in the seminar too, even to the fact of trying to talk through if there are children in the marriage with college financing, because you said that's not a given.
Not in Pennsylvania. There's no obligation in Pennsylvania to support an emancipated child. And an emancipated child is one who's reached the age of 18, graduated from high school, whichever is later, and is self-supporting. In other words, doesn't have a medical condition that would impact his or her ability to make a living. So what that means is the court can't force you to pay for college. This is not New Jersey. And you can bargain for college tuition, and it is frequently bargained for. And if it's bargained for and it's in your property settlement agreement, it's enforceable. Those are things that you should discuss with your lawyer. If that matters to you, that's a negotiating point that can be used. Expect to give something up to get it, though.
Mm-hmm. So it's important to be responsible, as Connie said, responsible to yourself, being aware of assets, liabilities, income, cash flows, credit reports that are out there. So take that responsibility, but also a little bit of a responsibility in thinking through forward. I would imagine a lot of people probably don't always want to think about the after divorce part. If they were hit over the head with this and they're living in denial or fear, you buck up, take
That's
control.
Exactly right. Okay. And it happens all the time where they say to us, it's not fair. I understand that, but it's happening. Deal with it.
Yeah. And be proactive.
Yes.
So we have about 3 minutes. So if Connie, you could maybe just talk for a minute about any just final words. I mean, you did say about being responsible. If
yes.
there's something else you want to add, take a minute to do that. And then I want to give Alan the same opportunity. And then we're going to talk about how to reach you.
Okay. So again, I just want to reiterate what I said. It's about being responsible. Yes, we are attorneys. We are here to help you and guide you through the process. However, ultimately, this is happening to you. It's not happening to us. And so if you wish for us to be the best advocates that we can possibly be for you, that's with providing us with all of the necessary information to do so. In addition, if there is something such as an outstanding mortgage, a car loan, things of this nature, where both of your names are on that debt, for lack of a better word, and your spouse discontinues paying that debt, remember, your name is on that loan note as well. So again, I understand that it's not fair that the person is not paying. And there are ways to get the person to contribute or whatever the case may be. But initially, that is your credit that is being destroyed as that monthly debt is not being paid and it's being reported to various credit agencies. So again, it's all about being responsible for yourself.
Great point. And Alan?
Focus on the big picture, not on the pots and pans. People get caught up in minutiae in divorces. They want stuff. Stuff is replaceable, and in divorces, the value is never replacement value. It's what you can get for it on Craigslist. What they don't focus on is, should I be fighting to keep the house that I can't afford to keep on the income that I'm going to be stuck with after the divorce? Have I focused on whether or not I really want the boat and the car instead of a larger share of the retirement so that I have something to support myself when I get to retirement age, given the fact that I may not have an opportunity to build much of a retirement benefit through my own employment? Talk to your CPA, and if you don't have one, get one. Talk to your financial analyst, and if you don't have one, get one. We lawyers, by and large, are not CPAs. There are a few of us. By and large, we're not financial planners. We can work with your CPA and we can work with your financial planner to help you fight for the best outcome that makes sense for you. Don't get caught up with the pots and pans.
That's great advice. And we didn't even talk about the after-tax considerations of your equitable distribution. So that's something that can come into play as well. I want to thank you so much for being on tonight. This was fun. I hope you had fun. Connie Nelson, Alan Tullar from Gross McGinley. If people would like to reach you, they are reaching you. How, Alan? If they want to email you, you said it's your first initial and last name?
Right. A. Tullar, A-T-U-L-L-A-R, at grossmcginley.com. Or you can call the firm at our general number, 610-820-5450, and ask to speak with Connie or her secretary or me or my secretary.
And that was
610-820-5450.
5450. And Connie, your email is?
Basically the same, C. Nelson, N-E-L-S-O-N, at grossmcginley.com.
Okay, thank you so much for being on tonight. Listeners, thank you for calling in. I appreciate all the questions. Lori, thanks for taking our calls. And Jeff, thanks for doing the board. Next week, I am going to talk about the who, what, where, when, why, and how of estate planning. I was going to talk about the Department of Labor rule, but we're thinking that might get struck down, so we're not going to talk about it after all. So we hope you can join us next week. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention. Be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.